to another episode of Lost in Science. We're so glad that you're with us, and we're so glad to all be here again today with me. My name is Lynn. With me, I've got Chris.
Hello.
Stu.
Hi.
And Claire.
Hello, Lyndon.
That's right.
Everybody's
here.
We're all here.
Very excited to be bringing another half an hour of science straight into your radio. Claire,
yeah.
Tell me what you're bringing us today.
Well, you know, I love a story about the animal kingdom, mm-hmm. and Parliament, our Australian Parliament, has recently returned into Parliament House to the Hill in Canberra.
Yes.
And so it's got me thinking, not about our politicians, because, well, I'm just not thinking about them right now. I am thinking about leadership in general. Ooh. In the animal kingdom.
Animal bosses.
And, yeah, exactly. Animal leaders. Not necessarily always bosses. Leading from behind. Leading from above. Leading when you're a guinea fowl.
Ooh. Ooh,
yes. There's some new research around leadership in guinea fowl. That is like, it's just... I love it. It's entertaining. There are little jackets that the guinea fowl wear, and it tells us a lot about the nature and stress involved when you take a punt and you step out and you say, "Hey, let's do this."
What power animals, next? Power poses, power dressing. That's what I'm hearing.
Yep.
What politicians can learn from the powerful guinea fowl in little jackets, you said.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. My goodness. I'm very excited about that. What about you, Stu?
Well, I'm turning to our fine feathered friends as well.
But, oh, yeah?
But actually, I'm trying to figure out, where did the feathers come from? And who was the first feathered freak out there? they must have been at the time, the ones who first appeared with the feathers. Everyone would have gone, check this guy out.
Yeah.
What is he wearing? but no, interesting research coming out in the pre-dinosaurs. Everyone thinks that dinosaurs were the feathered creatures.
Well, they should, unless they've been watching Jurassic Park. They should be thinking the dinosaurs.
They should. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, the history of dinosaurs is littered with bad ideas that were based on poorly understood science. Let's be honest about that. But the little guys I'm looking at are not dinosaurs. There's something before dinosaurs were even a feather boa on the horizon. They were little creatures who didn't have feathers either, but something similar.
Ooh,
yeah. So a very weird, interesting story from the depths of evolutionary history.
You plucked it from the ancient past.
I did.
Can you promise minimal puns?
No.
Oh, okay.
On this show? Never.
All right, then. Strap in, everyone. Let's go.
I have an unorthodox solution. A fantastic voyage, if you will. Hey, three scientists will be shrunk to microscopic size. Well, we have had a little trouble finding volunteers.
Lost in Science.
Now, as you all well know, I actually live in Canberra. Don't know if you knew that, but... I live in Canberra, guys.
We can hear it in your voice.
You sound chilly and democratic.
It is.
Yeah.
I am. And as it's our nation's capital.
I've heard that.
I'm pretty close to some of the big leaders, some of the big wigs, big dogs of the country. And, you know, it's got me thinking a bit about leadership, but not in our parliament. I've been thinking about leadership in the animal kingdom.
Oh.
So today I'm going to tell you about some of my favourite scientific studies and, what they tell us about leadership in species other than humans.
Question. You talk about the animal kingdom. Is there an animal king or queen?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Well, the lion is the king of the jungle.
The lion.
Which is a misnomer because they don't live in the jungle.
King of the beasts also, I've heard.
Yeah.
Mm. 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 Maybe by the end of this story, you will be able to vote on who the king of the species is.
Okay.
And then we'll pass it on. We'll pass it on to the animal kingdom.
Yeah, exactly.
We've had a bit of a chat and it's you.
Do we get? Is it preferential voting? Or
it is.
We just got to first past the post?
Yeah. No, it's preference voting.
Okay,
come good. On, we're yeah. in Australia. We need to abide by those that constitutional law. The first one I want to talk about. You don't have to go far from Canberra to learn about this research, because in the same week that our new freshly elected parliament sat for the first time, uh-huh. There was also some very quite interesting research published by the Australian National University, and the article was titled "The Physiological Cost of Leadership in Collective Movements." And it wasn't referring to collective movements of our government. It was referring to guinea fowl.
Oh, of course. You know, that's exactly where my mind goes to. The physiological cost of collective movement
in
guinea fowl edition.
Guinea fowl, are they the ones that you sometimes see them, like, they are quite aggressive?
Yeah, they're really loud as well.
Yeah. And they're something with, like, guarding other birds and that sort of thing.
Yes, they sort of look like a big pheasant. They've got blue heads. They actually sort of vibe mini cassowaries.
Okay.
Oh, right.
And the researchers tracked a group of them in Kenya over a period of 4 months using mini bird-shaped little jackets.
So, hang on, the researchers wore little bird jackets.
No, they put them on the birds. The birds had heart rate monitors and GPS tracking devices. So they had these like
little suits. Like, it was like a little suit. It was a little parliament of guinea fowl.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Little tie as well. Main badge.
It was a dress code. Yeah, I mean, as there should be in a parliament, isn't it? And what they found was that, like humans, these animals get stressed when they're trying to lead a group of their peers in a direction that they want to go. So, they got leadership anxiety. That's sort of like it's a common thing, and it's something that happens to the best fowl.
Did they find that it was always like the same fowl doing it, while the other fowl just sat in the back and said, "Yeah, I contributed to the project too." Asking for a friend.
The backbenchers.
Yeah. Was it always the same few alpha fowl?
Well, no, I don't think it was necessarily the same few alpha fowl. But one of the lead researchers is Damien Farine. And, well, he sort of talks about how it is quite common for many animal groups to actually make decisions in a very democratic way. So they might take like a majority rules approach. So the way this voting process can work is that like individual guinea fowl might move away from the group, so sort of like take up the leadership mantle and go in the direction that they want to go to find food. They're like, "I reckon food's over here. Who's with me?"
And the others will go,
"Yeah, exactly." And they'll either go, "Yeah," or they'll go, "Yeah,
yeah, it looks good."
Me. And so importantly, if no one follows them, if it's a "Yeah" moment, yeah. Then that is a failed leadership attempt.
Right.
And if it's a "Yeah," then that's a successful leadership event. And the way that the group eventually goes is usually when the most individuals in the group go with them. So that's sort of like how it all works out. Anyway, the researchers found that guinea fowl experienced the highest heart rate when they were initiating these movements, these sort of like calls to action. Come on, let's go,
so it's
guys.
Stressful. Like,
it's stressful.
Breaking out from the herd and... Away from the flock, yeah.
It is, especially when they're trying to do so against the majority of their group members. Mm. And this heart rate increase was even more pronounced when they made their rallying cry and then were met with, "Meh, no, we're not going with you."
I'm picturing like that Henry V kind of, you know, what is it, "Today we..." Something, I can't remember the quote. Shakespeare quote, "Forget it. I can't remember the thing."
Yeah,
you know.
I know, like a rallying cry this, like, you know, wannabe Napoleon of guinea fowl. And everyone just looking and being like, "Nah, I'm with Joe."
Yeah.
You know.
What was Joe's heart rate? Did they look at that?
Yeah, so Joe's heart rate still elevated but not as high.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So there was some sort of payoff for having the group go with you. It wasn't as stressful. So, yeah, what's a little rise in the heart rate in the grand scheme of things? Well, the researchers reckon it could be a bit of a big deal. It the increase in heart rate due to leadership anxiety can induce stress and even other sort of like physiological damage. So it might actually be harmful for the guinea fowl to sort of like put themselves out there and be the leaders.
Oh.
And yeah, it can actually be quite costly. And a reason could be a reason that some guineas opt out of contributing to leadership. So maybe it does end up
back of the back of the room. Yeah,
there they go, back to the back of the room.
They don't like attack each other or anything though. If they disagree, no, they just ignore them.
They just ignore them. Right. Yeah, but that is enough to cause this sort of like increase stress. In this stress. Just like. I really thought
we're not
I
going
was...
with Frank again. Frank, do they remember what he did last week?
Yeah, that's the other question. Like, what if there's memory? If Frank's like, over here, guys, and they say, nah, man, you sent us over there last week and there was nothing. We're not going with you this time.
But also,
did the researchers study that?
They didn't. Oh. That, well, no, it wasn't in this particular article, but it's a really good point, right? Because, like, I mean, they're guinea fowl, so I don't know how long their memory is, but there must be some sort of memory of everyone's got that. Well, everyone's got that guy in their social group.
I worry about Frank.
Come on, guys, it'll be fun. It wasn't fun last time, Frank, and it's not going to be fun this time either.
But how does Frank's and physiology respond after people reject their suggestion? Do they then, like, dwell on it and feel down for a few days? Do they, like, think over the conversation, like, what could I have said differently to get them to come with me?
Well, I mean, we can only assume.
Because I know there's good food there, but yeah.
Unfortunately, their little backpacks were not tracking right. Their innermost dialogue.
Yeah.
But I think we can probably assume that they were really beating themselves up about it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but hey, sometimes it's just not your time to shine.
No.
Yeah. Okay, so now one animal we could definitely take some leadership pointers from is different animal, African elephant. African elephant, I mean.
Mm. Mm.
I would follow an elephant rather than a guinea fowl.
So would I.
Yeah, 100%.
Not and too close.
No.
Like, not.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, if it was guaranteed that they weren't going to trample you,
yeah,
I'd 100% be there. So their chosen leaders are the wisest older females of the herd. So that's who their leaders are. And now not only do we see these older matriarchs, they can reach up to 60 or more years and they continue to lead their herds. And now there was a really fascinating study called Leadership in Elephants, the Adaptive Value of Age, that showed that these older females, they were actually better at making decisions for the group that were critical for the group's survival. And they were better at assessing threats. So they played back, the researchers played back recordings of lions to the groups of elephants, some with one lion roaring, some with three lions roaring, and differences in the number of female and male lions. So apparently male lions, because they're bigger, they pose more of a threat to the elephants than the female lions do. And what they found was that although both the younger and older matriarchs recognized the difference between one lion and three lions, and they changed their defensive behaviors for the group accordingly, the younger matriarchs underreacted to threats for male lions and put the group more at risk. Mm. And the older that the females got, the better they got at identifying the actual real risk and being better leaders.
Because they do remember. We know that much.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Well, famously, don't they? Mm. I mean, we don't know much about guinea fowl, but
yeah,
and how much they remember. But elephants,
yep.
Yes, they do. So there you have it. So that's like empirical evidence that you should really listen to the oldest in the group.
The oldest female in the group.
The oldest female in the group. Absolutely. Exactly. Exactly. So there you have it. It's, you know, we've got two species there. Guinea fowls, elephants. I reckon it's probably worth a reminder to our dear leaders what some of them are up to. Take it easy on your heart. Don't want to get too much leadership anxiety, parliamentarians. And also listen to the old ladies. They know a lot.
I think we're lost.
We're not lost.
Not even any short-range radio signals yet?
Except for a single, very powerful radio emission.
Of course, a transmitter of that sort isn't exactly standard equipment.
The science and technology must be absolutely mind-boggling.
Of course, that's mostly on the theoretical side.
What so far? Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, you're listening to Lost in Science.
Some of you might be old enough to remember the Don Spencer song, Feathers, Fur or Fins. Do you remember
that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
from the 80s. Mm-hmm. Sadly overlooked in the recent countdown of best Australian songs of all time. They didn't get to that one. But I remember it anyway. It's a great simplification of animals into groups for kids to try and grasp the how different the animals around them and around the world actually are. Of course, the animals that exist today are only a tiny fraction of all the species that have ever existed on Earth. And that division between feathers, fur, or fins doesn't really encompass the full picture. There's a lot more than feathers, fur, or fins in the world. But obviously, when we think about animals, feathers refer to birds, and the fur to the mammals, and fins to the fishy aquatic cousins of everything else. But even those broad groups, that's a massive variation, even if you're looking at those. It also ignores things that have no feathers, fur, or fins. So, you know, all like of
reptiles and amphibians.
And slugs.
And slugs? Oh, yeah. Well, we agreed not to talk about them.
All right, we won't think about the slugs. Yeah, there's no mucus in that song, as far as I can remember. But obviously, you know, they're broad brushstrokes. But fur and mammals are thought to have arisen in the Triassic. They used to think that it came as an offshoot of feathers, but they think it probably came earlier or around about the same time as feathers started developing.
Okay.
It's a different process in the skin that makes fur than what makes feathers. Okay. So they're not sort of directly related to each other. But it predates the dinosaurs because they've found things that have been swallowed by other animals that have fur on them. So they went, oh, well, obviously you're eating something furry. So it was around. And it's quite different to the way feathers and scales are formed, even though they're kind of similar. Like if you look at embryology, they're a bit similar in how they start. They're similar kinds of cells, but they go in different directions, obviously. But fossil evidence shows there were some furry little mammals running around hunting before any dinosaurs were doing the same thing, because dinosaurs obviously came a lot later. But they stayed small for a really long time. There were little tiny, fluffy little mammals running around. There was nothing big. Now, the dinosaurs developed in the late Triassic and they produced scales and later feathers. But the development of feathers is a puzzle. And why did they develop and how widespread were they is still a question that, you know, dinosaurologists have been pondering.
Because they're quite a complex thing, a feather, isn't it? Like it's from a scale. A scale is like simple thinking here. A scale is like a single bit of stuff. And whereas a feather has got like a middle bit, it's got like furry stuff off it.
And then there's like your inner feathers and your outer feathers. Yeah. They're very beneficial though.
Yeah. And the question is what were they for before they were for flying is a big question which hasn't really been adequately answered. There's all sorts of ideas. It might have been for display. It might have been for all sorts of other things. But if you know, obviously they're useful for flying, but you don't go from no feathers to feathers for flying without something useful happening in between.
And that's the order that it went, right?
Well, it had to have come. They had to have come to being able to fly with feathers from having feathers and not being able to fly.
So which came first, chicken and egg kind of situation?
But the feathers came first with the raptors, right? The feathers came with the raptors before the raptors turned into birds.
With the dinosaurs, it's a question. It's still a question that they're trying to figure out. And you know, being the fossil record, fur, feathers don't preserve very well. So, you know, we've got dinosaur bones which preserve very well because we've got, you know, there's places in the US where there was literally piles of bones on the ground when people went looking for them. There's a place called Bone Cabin Quarry, I think it's called, in Wyoming, where someone had built a cabin out of bones. They built dinosaur bones into a cabin. There was that many bones lying around. Anyway, it's hard with fur and feathers to actually track them through the fossil record because the fossil record isn't there for our benefit. It's just a fluke that any of it's there at all, really. In the 1930s, a French paleontologist called, and I'll get his pronunciation of his name completely wrong, it's Louis Grosvogel, came across fossils of tiny Triassic-era reptiles. he came up with heaps of them, just stacks of them in France, which in 2019 were named Mirasaura gravigelli, when new eyes recognized 80 of the fossils were the same species. So he just found all these little tiny reptiles and went, wow, oh, this is cool, and kept them. Died many years ago.
Mm.
The collection passed into new hands, which is often the way with some of this stuff. You know, the collection moves around. New people looked at it and went, hang on a second, these are all the same species of creature. Gave it a name. One of the weird things he kind of seemed to be annoyed about it. They're all associated with these weird fan-like depressions with the fossils of the bones of the little dinosaurs. No, they weren't dinosaurs, sorry, little reptiles.
Mm.
He thought they were contaminants from other animals. He thought they were either from giant insects, or he thought maybe they were fish and they'd all washed into a lake or something like that. He couldn't work out what they were because they're nothing like what you would expect to find with a reptile. So the researchers realized they're actually part of the Minasaura fossils, and they seem to form kind of a crest along the animal's spine, like sort of looks like from the images I've seen, it looks like a wing, a single wing along the spine of the animal.
So when I think of like Triassic era reptiles, I think of the Dimetrodon, that one that had the big kind of fin on the back.
Mm.
That's always in all the pictures of dinosaurs. I think that wasn't technically a dinosaur.
Yes.
So is it similar to that?
They're sort of more swept back.
Oh, right.
And they don't really know if they had control over them. There's no bones or anything in these in these spines, or in the crest, they kept calling it. So they don't really know, didn't know what it was, how it was, you know, but not like that. And these are much, much smaller. So these creatures are probably smaller than a cat, little tiny little reptiles. So they also looked more closely at the fossils using X-ray spectrometry and electron microscopes, and they found evidence of cells, which are called melanosomes, which we have and lots of other animals have. They are responsible for pigment production in hair and fur and feathers and skin. So these crests had melanosomes in them, meaning that they were all different colours.
Wow.
Ooh.
So then they looked at them a bit closely and they realised that they were a very similar substance to what feathers are made of, which is basically dead cells.
Yeah.
But they are not feathers because they didn't have the branching, as you were talking about before. The branching pattern of a feather is like a single sort of central vein with the little feathery bits coming off. They weren't shaped like that, but they were kind of like a similar material that they were made of, but they were definitely not feathers, and they actually predate feathers by millions of years because we're talking way before there's any evidence of feathers in the fossil record at all. So it's not clear, as I said, based on these fossils, whether they could move the crest in any way or if it was permanently on display and sticking up out of their back or if they could fold it down. There's no bones in it. There's obviously no muscle structure to look at because you're talking about fossils. There's bones and patterns left from these crests that they can look at. So they can't really work out how it was functioning. The fact that it was pigmented leads them to believe it was some sort of display. Which, you know, if you think you put it up as a display, you'd be good if you could fold it down. It depends what you're trying to indicate with your display, I suppose.
It makes me think of the completely different animal, the peacock spiders. Yeah. So it had that little kind of colour thing they stick up and do a little dance.
Well, yeah, and like peacocks do a similar thing with their feathers. Well, I mean, it's peacocks just a, it's something, you know, maybe it was a mating display, but without knowing if it could move or not, it's hard to say what they were doing with it at all. One of the most interesting parts of the research, which was published in Nature this month, is that it represents basically a completely unknown kind of appendage structure to either feathers or fur. It's not fur, it's not feathers, it's not scales, it's something else.
Ooh. Give John Spencer a call.
Yeah.
Tell him to update.
I think we've got to update the song because the kids are going to get really confused when they go looking at these French reptile fossils. They'll be like, Mum, this doesn't fit in the song. So these creatures are not direct ancestors of dinosaurs at all. They're not a direct lineage to dinosaurs. They didn't turn into dinosaurs. They didn't evolve into dinosaurs. They're a little side offshoot. And I think that's an interesting thing too, is that we're all descended from stuff that did well and survived, and we take fur and feathers for granted, but there could be a whole other branch of animals that have something else completely. So this is supported also by a fossil discovered in the sort of late 20th century called Longus squama insignis, which also has featherish appendages. But it was controversial when they discovered it whether it was early feathers or not, because the fossils were as old as the Mirasaura fossils. They sort of went, no, that's way too early for there to be any feathers on this thing. So they were arguing about it for years. Now they've reclassified these ones and gone, well, they're not feathers. They're not fur. They're something else again. We'll have to figure out a new name.
They haven't got the name yet?
Well, not really. They're just sort of going, they keep calling them skin appendages, which is not really going to catch on.
No.
Do you want people to write in with a suggestion?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you've got an idea of, it has to start with F, obviously, to fit in with a song. Yes. But
fluff.
Floppy. Fluff. Floofy.
Fleathers.
Floofs.
Floofs.
Yeah.
But yeah, so obviously this is way before any dinosaurs had any feathers, and it's something which we don't know anything that's still alive that has anything like it.
Fringe.
Fringe.
They're a fringe creature, which is out on the fringe. But yes, so this is a group of animals unrelated to feathered dinosaurs, unrelated to fluffy mammals, to furry mammals, has neither feathers nor fur and not fins either, but something else again. And that is all we have time for this week on Lost in Science. Thank you for joining us in Getting Lost. If you have any questions or suggestions for the team, get in touch with us by email. We are lostinsci@gmail.com. You can send cheap tweets to us at lostinscience1 on Twitter, or you can find us on the ubiquitous Facebook. Lost in Science is recorded at the studios of 3CR in Melbourne on the land of the Kulin Nation and is broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network with the assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find a podcast version of the show on 3cr.org.au, or you can tune in the way you did this week when we return in our usual time slot to get
Lost in Science!
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.